Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we consider what is being said in the U.S. Congress about terrorism. An analyst shares his pessimism about a meeting of Syrian opposition groups. An unusual candidate is running for cyber party president.
His company became very successful, and he sold it. And he then took off to Central America and began leading a lifestyle that I think most people would charitably describe as eccentric.
And we'll hear about a new musical hit from ex-ambassadors. It's right here on The Voice of America. The murder of 14 people and the wounding of 21 others in San Bernardino, California, has frightened Americans, already unsettled by alleged ISIS-supported attacks across the world. President Obama addressed the nation Sunday to reassure Americans, and U.S. politicians are speaking out about the issue. Our Capitol Hill correspondent Cindy Sain joins us on the line. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Susan.
You have reported on the remarks of Republican House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Michael McCaul.
Yes, that's right, Susan. Chairman McCaul gave a major speech on the state of security of the United States at the National War College. And he said that Americans are feeling very unsettled after the Paris attacks, after the San Bernardino mass shooting by some U.S. Muslims who it now appears were radicalized. And he said that the intelligence that he's getting shows that there is good reason for people to be unsettled and to be worried. And he called on the president to lay out a different strategy. He was not pleased with President Obama's remarks Sunday, saying the president really needs to do more. And he said that at times he felt like the president was tying U.S. generals' hands behind their backs.
And we might mention that the Homeland Security Division actually came as a result of the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Well, Cindy, tell us, what are the Democrats on the Hill saying?
Well, most Democrats praised the president and said that, you know, he's saying the right things. And some Republicans also praised the president for saying, you know, we're not going to defeat this Islamic State group by giving up on our own core values. And he said we need to reach out to Muslim Americans here, and they are on our side, and to, you know, to be in touch with their communities, because they are a great resource in helping us if there are people who are radicalized, you know, and letting us know and telling us that. And the president pointed out that Muslims are serving with distinction in the U.S. military. And so a lot of people have praised that. But the president also said he called on Muslim leaders to speak out when there is radicalization.
One of the complaints of the American people is the inaction by people in Washington on both sides of the aisle, the Republicans and the Democrats. Some Americans feel like they just haven't done enough. What is going on with congressional legislation to fight terrorism?
The House is voting today on a measure which would toughen the visa waiver program. And this is also in response to the Paris attacks. And Chairman McCaul, again, has been talking over and over again about the fear of ISIS sympathizers who have European or other passports who can just come freely to the U.S. I believe 38 million Europeans can come each year without a visa for 90 days. And so Congress is now working on, along with the White House, Congress and the White House agree on this, is toughening the visa program so that people who had gone to war zones, let's say in Iraq and Syria, that they would be screened a bit more carefully before they were allowed to come to the United States without a visa.
But a real hot topic is gun control. Any sign of anything happening on that before the end of the Obama administration?
Well, there are efforts underway, Susan. There's one Republican, Pete King of New York, who is sponsoring legislation that would close this possibility that people who are actually on a no-fly list, a terror watch list, which prohibits them from flying, can still purchase guns legally. So Peter King and some Democrats are working to get this legislation introduced in the House, and some Democrats are also trying, using a procedural maneuver to try to get it taken up. But so far, you know, Republicans are in the majority in the House, and House Speaker Ryan is not bringing up the bill.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy.
Thank you.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today, and joining me with details is VOA's Sarah Williams. Hi there, Sarah.
Hi, Susan. Well, there's quite a lot of reaction on social media regarding the terror threat following last week's shooting in California that claimed 14 lives. Writing in the publication Mother Jones, David Korn says, Obama declared that we will overcome the threat of terrorism. He added, our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving into fear. But the question is, where will the inevitable politics of tough talk and fear take the country? On CNN, Holly Yan writes that Muslims have been crucial in helping law enforcement find terror suspects in the United States. Many have served in the military protecting the country against terrorists. Congressman Mike Thompson of California tweets, over the last 11 years, more than 2,000 terrorist suspects bought weapons in the U.S. Time for Congress to act. Meanwhile, Katie in Indiana tweets, if Congress does not stop bringing Muslims from terror nations, you are state sponsors of terror on U.S. soil. Well, also trending today is hashtag John Lennon, and that's marking the 35th anniversary of the killing of the former Beatle. The Daily Mirror of London headline at the time said John Lennon shot dead in New York. Chloe Metzger tweets, 35 years since hashtag John Lennon was murdered, and Imagine is still such an iconic song in light of what's going on in the world. Justin Tranchita tweets, imagine all the people living life in peace. John Lennon, we miss you and still hope for that day. Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, who was near her husband when he was killed, tweeted today, over 1,100,000 people killed by guns in the USA since John Lennon was shot and killed on December 8, 1980. Hashtag stop gun violence. Susan?
Thank you, Sarah, for that report. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Paleontologists have recently discovered one of the biggest collection of dinosaur tracks on the Isle of Skye in Scotland. The assortment of tracks include hundreds of footprints made by giant plant-eating ancestors of the Brontosaurus. The dinosaur tracks, which are thought to be around 170 million years old, were found by the scientists in layers of rock, which they say was once the bottom of a shallow saltwater lagoon. Based on the size of the footprints, one as large as 70 centimeters in diameter, the researchers determined that the dinosaurs probably grew to at least 15 meters in length and weighed more than 10 metric tons. The discovery of the Skye dinosaur tracks, along with the findings made in other parts of the world, suggests that the animals, who were thought to be mostly land dwellers, actually spent much of their time along coastal areas in shallow water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Syrian opposition groups are in the Saudi Arabian capital Riyadh for 3 days of meetings aimed at choosing their representatives for international talks on a political transition in Syria. My colleague Victor Beatty is following that story and joins us now here in the studio. Welcome, Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, Saudi Arabia has been part of two recent international rounds of talks on Syria's future that were held in Vienna. U.S. spokesman John Kirby on Monday spoke of the purpose of the meeting.
They will start to try to get at a set of common principles around which opposition groups can unify as they begin to prepare for political discussions with the Assad regime, hopefully early next year.
I spoke with regional analyst Amin Saikal of the Australian National University. He says he sees little possibility of success at this week's Riyadh meetings.
Well, I think it's going to be a very difficult task, but obviously the Saudi authorities have decided that they should make a serious attempt to see if they can unite the different factions within the Free Syrian Army, as well as they've invited another group, which is called Islam Army, and plus two other religious groups, but at the same time they've excluded the Islamic State and Jabhat al-Nusra. And of course, there has been widespread view that Saudi Arabia has been behind Jabhat al-Nusra, but I think letting, in this case, the Saudi authorities know that the United States and its allies have designated Jabhat al-Nusra as a terrorist organization, just in the same way that they have designated Islamic State as a terrorist organization, and therefore those two entities have not been invited.
Why is Saudi Arabia hosting this meeting, and does it have the blessing of the West?
Because the Saudis have opposed the Assad regime from the very beginning of the crisis, and they would like to really see the removal of the Assad regime. But at the same time, the Assad regime is supported by Saudi Arabia's main regional rival, and that is the Islamic Republic of Iran, as well as, of course, by Russia and the Lebanese Hezbollah, which Saudis and some of their allies have designated as a terrorist group. So what the Saudis are basically trying to do is to gain the initiatives in terms of uniting the opposition forces, particularly they call it the moderate opposition forces, to the Assad regime, so that the Iranian insistence and the Russian insistence that the Assad regime is the only legitimate force and must remain in power is somewhat countered.
This meeting in Saudi Arabia comes as the outlook for some sort of political solution that was part of talks in Vienna appear rather bleak. There are continued international divisions over the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Well, I think that division still remains, although the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, has indicated that perhaps the Assad regime could have a role in a transitional period, you know, in other words, for the first few months of the transitional period. But that has been really rejected by Russia as well as Iran, because they have supported the Assad regime as the only legitimate force in Syria.
Finance ministers of UN Security Council members are to convene a December 17 summit in New York to consider new international efforts to cut off revenue for the Islamic State. While oil revenue from areas in Syria that are under IS control provides some funding for the terror group, a U.S. official said coalition airstrikes on oil sites have significantly degraded the group's ability to refine and smuggle oil. The group is also raising money through taxes on residents in areas they control, as well as the sale of looted antiquities.
Thank you very much, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, a computer pioneer jumps into the ring in the fight for the White House, and Renegades is rising on the charts. So far, the 2016 race for the White House has been one of the most unconventional in decades, and it's about to become even more so. Computer pioneer and millionaire eccentric John McAfee is tossing his hat in the ring at the head of the newly created Cyber Party, and he's promising his will be the first ever purely digital presidential campaign anywhere in the world. International Edition's Doug Bernard joins us now. Doug.
Susan.
Who is John McAfee anyway?
Well, let's stick with this word unconventional for a moment. So decades back, for those who are not familiar with him, it's likely they're familiar with his name or his product. Decades ago, McAfee was one of the first people to begin working in the field of antivirus to protect people's home computers from malware and hackers and whatnot. This is very non-mainstream. His company became very successful. He became very wealthy, and he sold it to Intel. And he then took off to Central America and began leading a lifestyle that I think most people would charitably describe as eccentric. Many other words have been used to describe it. But he's still always a man of substance and foresight. One person I spoke with said, you know, McAfee has the ability to sort of look around the corner and see problems really before they're in the mainstream view. So it's interesting now that he's taken this moment, he's launched what he's calling the Cyber Party. Its platform is freedom, privacy, and technology. And he is promising to run a very unconventional presidential bid.
Now, is anybody taking him seriously about this?
Oh, I think people are taking him seriously. I don't think the Washington political establishment in any way is taking him seriously. I don't think the two main parties, the Democrats or the Republican Party, are looking at him as a serious challenger. But again, McAfee is a guy who does always seem to be just sort of a little bit a step ahead. And it will be interesting to see if he's able to, you know, take this sort of insurgent online candidacy and really maybe begin to have something have an impact, if not in terms of big numbers of votes, then maybe shaping and steering some of the presidential discussions.
So he can get his views out and get influence in the game, even if he's not going to be the first one out of the gate.
Exactly so. There is almost 0% chance that he would win the office for the presidency. There's too many factors stacked against an independent run like that. But sort of like we saw some years ago with Ross Perot and some other third-party candidates, I think his biggest contribution, I think, might be getting cyber really maybe to the forefront of candidates' discussions. It's been absent so far in this presidential race.
So is he going to be using Twitter and Facebook and...
Well, even more. He told me in an interview that he gave with VOA that they're building apps and specialized software that will allow people to connect with him instantly. He's already planning what he's calling digital fireside chats, sort of like Franklin Roosevelt. But instead of using the radio, he wants to use the internet to share and actually exchange views with some of his supporters. So I think his is trying and hoping to really innovate and see just what the power of the internet might be able to bring to something as serious as a presidential election.
And you've got a story on our website about this?
We do. We sat down with an interview with him. You can watch the entire 20-plus minute interview if you want, or you can read our edited transcript.
It's titled
John McAfee, Cyber President.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Great to be here.
This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
Touted as the world's first people-powered roller coaster, the Green Dragon is a main attraction at the environmentally friendly Greenwood Forest Park just south of Bangor, Wales. Managing Director Stephen Bristow says visitors can have a great day out without using a lot of energy.
We want to give them a fun day out that is not a huge drain on the environment.
The Green Dragon uses the weight of passengers in a separate carriage to haul the cars to the top. Passengers then have to climb a staircase before hurtling down a winding 250-meter track. Just adjacent to the park is an array of solar panels that can produce up to 135 kilowatts of electricity at peak capacity.
It will still go on generating even in fairly low light levels, and it puts power into our system.
More than 145,000 people visited the park last year to enjoy other low-energy attractions like pedal-powered moon carts, a 70-meter slide, and archery. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
Larry London is back in our studios to talk about something from the music world, and this week we're going to talk about a popular band. It's called X-Ambassadors. Spelled just like it sounds, he tells me. And welcome, Larry.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Yes, this group is from Ithaca, New York, upstate New York, featuring the brother team of Sam and Casey Harris and friends that they've known since kindergarten in Ithaca, Noah Felchew and Adam Levine. And they have put out an album. And on the album is a song called Renegades, which is very, very popular right now. It's in the top 20 here in the U.S. It's doing well in Australia and Canada and France and Germany. And also the band performed recently in a music festival, which is kind of interesting. It's called Bedstock. You've heard of Woodstock?
Yeah.
This is Bedstock. It's an in-bed music festival, exactly as it
so
sounds.
You bring your own bed to this event?
No, the bed is provided. and it was in Portland, Oregon on December 1st, and some 30 bands participated in this music festival where they all performed in a bed, and they did it to raise money for the Children's Cancer Association. So they raised a lot of money, and they did a good thing at the same time.
That's great, and this band is involved in a lot of other things other than just plain old music.
Well, absolutely. Their music is just about everywhere, including, as I mentioned, a TV commercial for Jeep, which is a very popular auto here in the United States. So the TV commercial is also getting a lot of attention. The song Renegades, named after, well, could be the Jeep Renegade, which is why Jeep decided to go with the song. You'll also find their music in video games, like a Madden football video game. It's on TV shows. Their music is featured in a number of different places. It was a TV commercial other than Jeep that they were using the songs for. So they've done a lot of work, and the new album is out, and it features a number of guests, including Imagine Dragons, who are very popular.
Well, you usually have dirt on somebody, but you haven't mentioned anything on this ban?
There's no dirt, so to speak. They're not in any trouble. They haven't caused any trouble.
They're egging their neighbors' houses or anything?
No, like their album is called VHS. And so that's about as interesting as it gets. The album is called VHS. But I will also go on to say that of the two brothers, Sam and Casey Harris, that Sam is blind.
Oh,
and but that
unusual.
You know, I mean, surely there's been many, you know, Jose Feliciano and Ray Charles, and the list goes on. Some tremendously talented blind musicians over the years.
Yes, but it does make it difficult to get around and travel and do all the things bands have to do.
It makes it difficult to read music. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult to travel. Obviously, you have to deal with some extra, you know, inconveniences. But you know, they're doing great, and right now they're getting a lot of attention.
Well, you say they're called pop.
They're called alternative rock. That's really the category that they fit into. Although, you know, a band can be called something and release a song which fits a totally different kind of a format, which is the case with Renegades. It's played on pop, it's played on alternative rock, and that's kind of their groove. And they also do a lot of songwriting with other artists. So you know, that's a band to be watching out for.
Okay.
And listening out for.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Susan.
The 2016 VOA calendar is ready for you. This year, it features 12 photographs that capture a slice of life in New York City. If you would like one, please send your snail mail address by email to calendar@voanews.com. That's calendar, C-A-L-E-N-D-E-D-A-R, at voanews.com. We would like to invite you to follow us also on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gender-based violence is violence directed against women because they are women, or violence that affects primarily women and girls. They are human rights violations committed against women that stem from discrimination and gender inequality, and the failure of governments and societies to recognize the human rights of women and girls. Globally, over one-third of women and girls experience some form of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. Violence against women takes many forms and goes far beyond rape and physical intimidation. Every girl who was married off too young, every wife who was beaten by her husband or in-laws, every woman or girl who was trafficked into sexual exploitation is a victim of gender-based violence. Girls and women who are subjected to sexual violence in war zones, honor killing, psychological abuse, such as harassment and intimidation, are victims of gender-based violence. All forms of gender-based violence are unacceptable violations of human rights, but together they form an enormous obstacle to gender equality, economic development, security, and true human progress. The 2 weeks between November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and December 10th, Human Rights Day, are dedicated to 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. 16 days of campaigning around the world to challenge and raise awareness of gender-based violence and mobilizing people everywhere to bring about change. This year's theme is From Peace in the Home to Peace in the World, Make Education Safe for All. The root causes of violence against women and girls include gender stereotypes, perceived gender roles, and social norms. These perceptions are formed early in childhood. Only through education can we hope to change them. This means that girls and women must be able to obtain an education so they and their children can lead better lives. It means creating a safe, hygienic school environment for them and removing obstacles that cut their education short, such as domestic work or early marriage. And it means that boys and men must be taught to engage in preventing violence against women and promoting gender equality. Gender-based violence is not inevitable. It is a choice. It can and must be prevented, and the time is now.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.